Welcome back. 349, 730 AM, 102.9 FM, WTNT. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times. And a pleasure to welcome back to the program Sean Waterman, Washington Times national security reporter. Hello, Sean.
Hello, Andy.
South Korea links cyber attack to China, North Korea. This is the attack that hit the banks and the broadcasters in South Korea over the past couple of days?
Yes. Yesterday afternoon, Korean time, the computer networks of three banks, two insurance companies, and three national broadcasters all just went offline. ATMs were off. The internet banking was down, mobile banking for several hours. Some of the systems weren't restored until this morning.
Huh. Now, the IP address linked this activity to the Chinese, or was it simply routed through China? Do we know?
Well, we don't know. I mean, you know, that's the problem with this, with the whole cyber warfare, is you're never quite sure who it is who's attacking you. So, yes, the malware was downloaded from an IP address in China, but that could be, you know, an innocent third party who was hacked by the attackers. And you know, it's unlikely that the Chinese will cooperate with any investigation. So it's unlikely that we'll get a clearer idea of who was responsible.
Yeah.
Some of the coding, I mean, it was clearly targeted specially for Korean computers. It looked for Korean antivirus programs and tried to switch them off. Some of the coding was in Korean, although it also used, there's some Chinese terms in there as well, and the shell, what they call the malware shell, has been used before. It's out there. It's really, you know, available to criminal groups. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's commercial grade malware. It's not like Stuxnet. It's not super advanced. Someone today told me, well, if it was the North Koreans, you know, they moved from primitive to basic.
Okay. Now, has it presented major problems, or would this be considered just more of a nuisance?
Well, I think in the end it's a nuisance. I mean, we'll see what the impact is. I think the psychological impact, you know, how Koreans feel about their internet banking and their security of their banking system generally, we'll have to, you know, find that out over the next few days. In Estonia, when this happened in 2007, you know, there was no significant impact on public, on public confidence. So, but we don't know, what this might do in South Korea.
Right.
The other thing is that, you know, it's made the banks here in the United States, as your listeners might know, Andy, have for about the last 9 months been periodically subjected to these very sophisticated and large-scale denial-of-service attacks. This is a different kind of hacking attack from the malware that struck in South Korea. But you know, this is South Korea. It's not Zimbabwe. You know, this is one of the most wired countries on Earth, and I'm sure the banks there have every kind of security. So I think the American banking sector is probably taking a very close and rather nervous look at what happened.
Yeah. All right. Now, this isn't the first cyber attack waged against South Korea, right? This is one, though, that's more sophisticated.
Yes. The previous two attacks, which were in, I think, 2009 and 2010, were basically, you know, very straightforward denial-of-service attacks, that any kind of 13-year-old script kiddie could have orchestrated. This is a slightly more sophisticated. And someone wrote the malware so that it all activated at a particular time.
I got you.
You know, so because these computers had clearly been infected for some time, and then, you know, when the deadline passes, click, and everything goes blank. Very mm-hmm. alarming, I'd have thought.
Yeah. You know, in the past, you and I have talked about cybersecurity, and it has become bigger and bigger as the years go by. And we've also talked about how the Pentagon has had to take steps against this. Are there vast improvements? Are we seeing improvements in cybersecurity in this country?
Well, I think in this country, I think yes, you know, it's a good in parts, as the parson said to the bishop. you know, it has been improved, but there's, you know, like the banks, you know, have been knocked offline by these denial of service attacks for hours at a time, sometimes almost a whole day. In the at the beginning, when they were a bit, you know, less used to dealing with them, but you know, it's the new normal, Andy. You know,
okay.
This is the kind of thing is going to go on. It's mainly going to be in the background. I think every now and again, it's going to, you know, burst out a major attack like the one against South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, this is the new normal. We're just going to have to learn to live with it, I think.
I got you. All right, one more thing before I let you run today. I noticed you had a short story about the U.S. putting up $10 million bounty on Americans suspected of helping terrorists in Somalia. Who are these people?
Yeah, that's right. This is the rapping jihadi, Abu Ansor al-Amriki, or Abu Mansour the American. His real name's Omar Hamami, born in Alabama, but he went to Somalia a few years ago. He became a spokesman for Al-Shabaab, the Al-Qaeda-linked extremist group in Somalia that's been fighting this very vicious insurgency against the UN-backed transitional government there. Recently, however, you know, he has... He's got into a sort of online spat with Al-Shabaab, and in fact he said, you know, he has a YouTube channel, he has a Twitter feed. He said that that they want to kill him, and he's been very critical of their methods and their strategy online.
Well, why don't they just let him kill him and we'll keep the $10 million?
well, I suppose that might be one way of doing it. I think, you know, this Rewards for Justice program is quite important. And, you know, what I suspect that, you know, they're hoping that if he really is isolated, and it certainly seems he is, you know, not really persona grata with Al-Shabaab, then perhaps it might be, you know, more likely that someone will turn him in for the money.
Yeah.
But we'll have to see.
All right. Well, if they don't turn them in and they get them, we'll take the $10 million and we'll try to open up the White House tours again with that money. All right? we'll work some kind of deal. Sean, as always, great to talk to you, my friend. Thanks for helping out with these two stories.
My pleasure, Andy.
See you. Sean Waterman, Washington Times National Security Reporter. 357, 730 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT. It's Andy Parks live from the Washington Times.